All right, it's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker from Fresno. He has 17 years of sobriety. Let's give it up for Michael.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 27, 2001. That's a miracle. You know, they say don't leave until the miracle happens. So that, you know what? It's happened. It's happened today for each and every one of us that are in the rooms. I got an email suggesting that the Valley Group likes to talk about the spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Also talked about the three legs of sobriety, about recovery, about unity, and about service. When I was asked to speak about that, that's what I do. That's what I've been doing for the last 17 years, one day at a time, sometimes 1 minute at a time. I would like to welcome all the newcomers. And for those of you that identified it as addicts, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I myself am, my drug of choice is actually cocaine, but I found recovery in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a new life today, a life worth living, something that I never had prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I firmly believe the program is found in the book of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The chapters, starting with the doctor's opinion and chapter one, Bill's story, we can find about, you know, there's a solution, more about alcoholism. We find the program there. And one of my favorite chapters that I'll be citing throughout the book a little bit in my talk tonight. But I was always go back and I reflect on we agnostics. And not that I wasn't a believer of God. I always believed in a God. It didn't really matter what my family lineage was that we called that God. But I always believed that there was a creator somewhere. And, you know, and I always had a feeling, why did he not love me the way he loved everybody else? You know, why didn't I fit in? Why didn't I feel like others did? Why didn't I have the things that other families had? Why was I molested at a young age, at 4 years old? You know, where was he then? So I had a lot of resentment against God. And a lot of times I think when we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a problem with the God issue. You know, some people can't even say it. Oh, God. You know, as soon as they start thinking about God, or they think about church or whatever problem it is. But the fact of the matter is, for me, I wasn't ready to look at myself. So it was easy to blame God. He's the one that made me. Blame him. It's his fault. He made me this way. You know, so for me, my recovery has had its ups and its downs, but it's had more ups than downs. I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous the first time in 1987 at 17 years old. I walked into the St. John's Cathedral basement in Fresno. And I don't even know how or why I ended up at that meeting. I think maybe my football coach in high school made me go because he knew that I had a problem drinking. And I didn't hear anything. I don't remember anything said, but I remember being in a basement with a bunch of weirdos. I don't even know if they were hugging and they were talking about, I heard God, and I just wanted to leave as soon as I could to go drink. And whenever I drink, I use drugs. That's my disease is twofold. Like I said, my drug of choice is cocaine. But alcohol was always there. That was my first drug, was alcohol. So after leaving that meeting, I probably didn't go to another meeting for, I don't know, maybe a year or two. And then I found myself at a place called the ODAT Club in Fresno, California. And the ODAT Club was real rough, smoky. It was kind of like an old bar, kind of. But it was nasty. And there was... there was street people in there, there was gang members in there, and there was parolees in there, and there was pimps in there, and there was prostitutes in there, and I loved it. I felt right at home. It was great. Yeah. My current sponsor and I both started there, so I'm going back to 91, 92 time, and I was there, and I think I started going there for a friend of mine that had got another DUI, and I was going to support my buddy, so I'll go hang out at some meetings. And you know what? When you hang out at AA long enough, you either recover or you don't. You know, because I have some firm beliefs that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're just going to meetings, you're probably not recovering. You're just going to a bunch of meetings. You know, because if I sit amongst a bunch of active AA members, I'm not going to recover. You know what I mean? Until I start doing the things they do, I can't get what they got. You know, that's what I found out. But I always enjoyed going to meetings. You know, I'd go to a bunch of meetings, and I'd feel pretty good, and I wouldn't drink, and I wouldn't use, and my life would get better. And my sponsor and I now, our first sponsor, Ron M. in Fresno, he told me. He told me that. I think I was on my way to federal prison at the time for some withdrawals I made without an account at some financial institutions. And he told me, Michael, if you just stop drinking and stop shooting cocaine, your life will get better. And you know what? He was right. He was absolutely right. I stopped drinking and I stopped shooting cocaine, and man, my life got better. But that's all I did. That's all I did. I'd hit meetings here and there, wouldn't drink, wouldn't use. And when you're not drinking or using, if you're anything like me, you're some of the difficulties that we face, like DUIs or jail or fights or spending all your money and not remembering what you spent it on and blacking out and wrecking cars, all those things, you, it doesn't really happen to you. So your life, you know, kind of gets better, you know. But what I found is that I had to do more because that didn't cut it for me. And I'm very much a criminal, that mentality. You know, that's for years in recovery, I'm a liar. And if you ask me a question, I always think of three responses to give you. You know, the truth, my version of the truth, and just a complete fallacy that I made up. You know, and it took years to stop doing that. Today I can speak the truth. You know, and it's okay. You know, like I said, I was molested at a very young age, and you know, I could never admit that. On my first four step, I didn't put that down. I can't share that I got molested when I was 4 years old. What are they gonna think of me? You know, today I don't care what you think of me and the industry. You know, of what's happened to me in my life and what I've done to others. You know, it's okay, guys, because I am exactly where I'm supposed to be at this given point in time in my recovery. You know, today I live free. I have a free life. And that wasn't always the case. I mentioned that I was going to a federal prison when I was 21 years old. Spent some time there. And when I got out, I had the mentality that if I got a job, a girlfriend, and a car, I'd be okay. You know, and I had that stuff in a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? And as fast as I can get something, I can lose it twice as fast. That's just the way it works for me. I don't know if you guys can relate to that. One day you're doing pretty good. You got a little car. You got a job. And you got some money. You got somebody in your life. And then one night, you wake up the next day and it's all gone. And everybody hates you. Everybody. Your parents, your girlfriend, your kids, your neighbors, your employers, everybody hates you. And it's the end of the line. And the only thing left to do is die a day at a time, you know. And we start killing ourselves a day at a time. You know, just like we recover a day at a time, we kill ourselves a day at a time when we drink and when we use. You know, chapter 4, I said that was the we agnostics. In the beginning of chapter 4, it says that by now that you have learned something about alcoholism for the preceding chapters. And what it does, it tells you the if you may or may not be an alcoholic, but if you honestly want to quit and you find difficulty entirely quitting, if you have difficulty after you start drinking, controlling your drinking, you're probably alcoholic. Okay. For me, it's a little bit easier. I can probably even do without that paragraph in that book, because if you find yourself in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're probably an alcoholic. I try to keep it easy. You know, I'm a numbers guy, so, you know, you're probably an alcoholic. If not, what the hell are you doing here? You know, normal people don't find themselves in rehab. You know, I have the gift and the joy of, this is the second time I've spoke today. You know, I spoke this morning at a recovery program in Clovis, California called First Steps Recovery. And I got to share some of, I didn't go into too much of detail about my previous life prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, but I did get to give detailed examples of how you stay sober one day at a time working the 12 steps. And that's kind of what I want to talk about tonight. At the same time, I want to let you in a little bit how big my journey's been and the depths that I've rose from where I've came. And so going back to that ODAC club, you know, after I left there, I went to federal prison, I got out, I got the girlfriend, I got the car, I got the job, I got the apartment, and I had hit a meeting every now and then, and then something happened in 1998 that was my last relapse. And I told the story this morning. I was working at Da Vinci's Pizza there in Fresno, and I had a nice new car, and I was a manager there, and I was doing well, and everything was okay. I wasn't drinking, I wasn't using. But remember, if you just don't drink and don't use, your life gets better, but you're not recovering. So what happened was that I jumped in my car after work that day, and turned the radio on, and Janis Joplin came on. That was my sister, one of my sister's favorite songs by Janis Joplin. And for some reason, a spiritual experience happened, and I wanted to call my sister, so I called her up. You know, she answered the phone. Everything was fine. I went over there and picked up my girlfriend's little boy. We went over to visit my sister, and something that was out of character for me, I didn't do. And the very next day, after work, I jumped in my car, and I turned the radio on, and the same song came on again. And I was like, wow, that's weird. Maybe I should call my sister. My sister also suffered from the same disease I did, alcoholism, drug addiction, and denial. And so I called her up, and her partner answered the phone. And I could hear her arguing in the background, and she said, Michael, I need you to come over and help me with your sister. She's out of control. And at that time, I thought, do I want to go get in between two lesbians fighting over a domestic issue? Absolutely not. So I chose the easy way out, and I said, you guys just, you know, handle your own business. I'll talk to you later. So later that night, about 11:30, 12 o'clock that night, my mom rolled up to my girlfriend's house, and she got out, and she was in tears, and she said that my sister committed suicide that night. She shot herself. So at that time, you know, the only thing I could do was blame myself. And, you know, today I don't shoulder that blame because I'm not responsible for anybody's recovery, nobody else's life, just for myself. You know what I mean? However, at that time, I took that burden and ultimately ate me up, and I had the worst relapse that I've ever had, you know. And I call it a relapse. So I hadn't worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't get sober through the book and through sponsorship, through unity and service. So it wasn't really a relapse. I just drank and I used, because that's what we do, is we drink and we use to get away from those feelings. Now, you know, years later, if you've worked the 12 steps and you've come to the conclusion that you're alcoholic and you found recovery and you stopped going to meetings and you stopped doing the things that you started to do when you first got sober and then you drink, you've relapsed. So just let you guys know, the ones that just came in here, the newcomers, you know what I mean? So if you leave tonight and go out and drink or use, that's what we do. You know what I mean? But there is a solution. There's people here that love you that you don't know. There's people here that care about you that you don't know. But you'll find these people and they'll help you. So after that, you know, ultimately that the last relapse sent me back to prison again. You know, so I went back to prison for the second time in my life. And, you know, I like to sell drugs. That's my favorite thing to do other than do drugs, is to sell drugs. So I was in the California Department of Corrections, and I was selling heroin. And with heroin in prison, you have power and you have control. And funny thing is, in our book, it says that lack of power is our dilemma. You know what I mean? So if you got the heroin, you got the power. You got the control. So I was looking around my cell one day, and I was thinking, man, I really got it going on. Boy, I got it going on. I got a black guy ironing my clothes. I got some Southsiders to wash my back. I got some woods to go pick up some packages at the commissary and the canteen for me every other day. I got all these soups and all this coffee. I got all these candy bars. I got that beautiful 13-inch color TV. Wow. I had it going on. I probably had four or five girls I could call on the phone any day I wanted to. I had it going on, you know. I walked over to my cell window and looked out. I could see a field outside of Wasco, the dirt. I said, well, I got it going on. You know, I got it going on. You know, I can flag my door and get out anytime, just the guard likes me that's running the tower, you know. And I had it going on. And somehow, some way that day, my God spoke to me. You know, and what he told me, he says, and this is all you will ever have. And I heard that very clearly through my head all the way to my heart. And at that moment in time, I looked around and I knew that this is not what I wanted for the rest of my life. This is not the best I could do. This is not the best I could be. So I made a decision that day, And, you know, I would like my story to change a little bit, like right now. Like, I got my heroin, flushed it down the toilet, and swore off, I'll never do that again. I didn't. I contacted some people I knew and got rid of it and gained some more finances to facilitate the rest of my stay. So, but I did make the decision that day that I was going to stop doing what I was doing and living the way I was living. So that's why my sobriety day is actually August 27, 2001. I hadn't drank or used prior to that date probably for another year, year and a half. But that day I made that decision. And that was the 24th that God spoke to me. On the 27th, I washed my hands of it, and it's my sobriety day. And when I got out, I started going to meetings inside, and I started reading, started contacting people back here in Fresno and the surrounding San Joaquin Valley. H and I came in, and I'm very grateful for them for carrying the message of hope and recovery to me. And what I did was I made a plan. You know, I made a plan, and I talked to other people about that plan and not just make a plan and go with it. So all the new people here that are making plans, you might want to run it by a sane person that's worked the steps first, you know. You might want to, you know, just a suggestion. This program is built on suggestions. So my plan was that I was going to go find Jeff L. That was my first plan. I was going to get out. I was going to go to the Alano Club in Fresno the first day I got out. You know what I mean? And I was going to find Jeff L. And I was going to ask him to sponsor me. I was pretty sure Jeff was still sober. We had the same sponsor coming in. I took a 10-year break, but I came back. And, you know, since I got out, you know, I've been listening to his suggestions. I've been watching him. And I've been following his directions. You know, I do what I do. We do it together. You know, it's our sponsorship has evolved and changed over the years. But I never have had anyone that I've looked up to in sobriety as much as Jeff. You know, I firmly believe that you have to have complete confidence in your sponsor. And that's something that I have today. You know, so if you have to second guess people in your lives, they probably don't, you know, they may not be the ones for you. You know, but there are sponsors in Alcoholics Anonymous that can help you change your life. You know what I mean? So that was just one part of it. That's the recovery aspect. You know, I've been asked to speak on all three of it. And the recovery aspect is have a sponsor and work the steps. You know, and then there's a service. You know, when people call the day before you're supposed to speak somewhere and they ask you to speak, you say yes and you go. You know, you secretary meetings. You clean up after the meetings. You make coffee. You give newcomers rides. You help people, you know, and that's the service of this program. And that's what we do. You know, that's what we get to do. You know, a lot of times I get bogged down by helping people. You know, for, I don't know, maybe like years 10, I was like, oh, my God, I'm so sick of helping people. Started getting very judgmental and, you know, full of, you know, ego and pride. Jesus, I'm so sick of these people helping these people looking around, you know. And I misread the big book. I don't know if you guys do too. You read something and you think it tells you something and you follow that and then later you reread it and say, oh, that's not what it said at all. You know, and it says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we can help meet their needs. I read it as meet their needs. The codependent in me wanted to help meet your needs. No, meet your needs. So anytime somebody needed something, I'd run over there and meet their needs. You know, that's not what it says. It says, help meet your needs. So about the time that I developed that and I got that understanding, what happened was one of the female friends of mine from the program, from Pullman Shaw, from Morning Maintenance, she called me and asked me if I would like to help her move on Saturday. And I was like, no. Not at all. And she was kind of taken back and shocked, and she was like, really? I said, yeah, really. I don't want to help you move on Saturday. And I thought about help meet your needs. I have a truck, but you can use my truck. She says, Michael, are you sure you want to let me use your truck? I said, well, I'm sure I don't want to help you move. So that helped me a little bit. That helped me, you know, gain a different perspective, you know. You don't have to meet their needs. You can help people sometimes just pointing them to somebody else. Just giving them some direction. You know what I mean? Because that's essentially what our program is. It's just a bunch of directions. You know what I mean? Who's got the money? The secretary. He's over there. That's a direction. Where's the chairperson at? He's over there. Where's the coffee maker? They're over there. So all these directions, you know, that's what it is. They're suggestions, they're directions. You know what I mean? But you know what? They're hard for us to follow. I don't know why. You know, it's good common sense. It's decent, orderly direction. It's fundamentally sound. It's basic. But as alcoholics and drug addicts, I'll throw that in there too, because we're all here together. You know? Somebody can give you some solid sound advice, and you're like, are you crazy? You want me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days? Are you nuts? You want me to read chapter 1 about Bill? War fever ran high, and you know what I mean? It just, they're pretty basic, simple things. You know, my life prior to Alcoholics Anonymous consisted of having to kick in doors and rob drug dealers, and had to rob stuff and run from the cops, and, you know, just, wow. You know how much easier my life is today than it was then? I found the easier, softer way. Earlier I said I'm a numbers guy, right? I shared this morning to be out. We're given 24 hours in a day. They say our program is a daily program. So most of us drink and use every day. Most of us. Not everybody. Some were binge drinkers, binge users, whatever. So I have a day, you know. So if I give up 1 hour of that day and go to a meeting every day, I get 23 hours back every day. That's like me giving this gentleman a $100 bill every day, and he gives me back $2,300 every day. That's a pretty good deal. That's a great deal. You know what I mean? That's something that I would invest in. You know, that's sound. And I get to do anything else, you know, in my life today for 23 hours. I get to sleep at night. I get to work and support my life. You know, I get to do things that normally I would never have gotten to do. You know, this past New Year's Eve, I was in Bangkok, Thailand, at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. How did a drug addict, alcoholic guy from Fresno, you know what I mean, end up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Bangkok, Thailand? Wow. It's almost like I've been rocketed into the fourth dimension. For those of you who haven't read the book, it's in there. You know what I mean? Going back to chapter 4, we agnostics, after that portion, it says, you may be an alcoholic, you're probably an alcoholic. Not only that, but it's possible that the only way that you will survive is through a spiritual experience, a vital spiritual experience. Man, this is stuff that's right on. It's like I made it up. This is stuff's in the book. Let me tell you something about people in Alcoholics Anonymous, too. The people with time, guess what? We didn't make it up. We just heard somebody else share it at a different meeting. You know what I mean? We read the book. We listened. That's it. And we just repeat. We just follow directions and repeat what we've heard. You know what I mean? So everything that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is pertinent to me today. You know, when I first read the book, I was like, to the wives? Well, I'm not going to read to the wives. I ain't no punk. I didn't say it. You know what I mean? So you know what? Maybe I can help somebody that has a wife. You know, I don't know who I'm supposed to help. I don't know who God's going to put in my path to help. It's not my business, first of all. Most likely, it's somebody I don't like. Most likely. You know, I found that in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a bunch of people that I love everybody, first and foremost. I love everybody. You know what's weird? On the way over here prior to this, my sponsor and another guy came to my house, and my phone was on like Facebook or something, and the little message stories go across the top. And this guy's talking about Philippians, about love, and love doesn't boast, love is kind. And I'm hearing this, I'm like, where in the hell is this coming from? And I'm walking, that's what a little message that God gave me tonight, about love. You know what I mean? And that's my job, is to love everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless whether I like you or not. You know what I mean? Because it says that we're a bunch of Alcoholics basically that wouldn't mix otherwise being in this room. You know what I mean? So I don't like everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never will. Let's be honest about it. I never will. And guess what? Not everybody likes me. It's okay. I got dressed up tonight, too, by the way. I have my Metallica shirt on this morning at the rehab, and I told them I was going to dress up tonight, so I put a Van Heusen dress t-shirt on. You know. But not everybody's going to like me. And you know what? I'm okay with that today. I'm okay with that today. You know, I was speaking to some of the people in the program about liking and disliking certain members because we're judgmental. You know what I mean? I don't like to call it being judgmental. I like to call it being observant. You know, I like to hide my character defects by giving them different names that are socially acceptable to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So as I observe these people, I look around and there's a lot of people that I don't like that don't like me. But you know what I mean? My sponsor says this, is that when we first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, we could look around and tell you something bad about everybody. He's too fat. She's too short. He's too this. She's too that. You know what I mean? And what happens after a while? We can look around a room and we can say something good about everybody. Because there's good in everything. There's good and bad, and there's bad and good. You know what I mean? You know, today I'm a somewhat well-respected member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today I'm in good standing. Guess what? I wasn't always in good standing. I've had character defects along the way, too. You know what I mean? But I couldn't live with them. I couldn't walk that walk. So what I've done is I rededicated myself to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in a large degree. It's not like it was out, you know, selling drugs again, but I thought about it. I thought about, wow, I haven't drank or used in about 10 years. I'll flip a couple kilos, you know, and that's the sick mentality. That's the disease talking. It's the same disease that tells you don't go to a meeting. The same disease that's telling you right now that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Same one. The same one that says, you should go smoke a cigarette. It's the same one that tells you, man, is he going to keep talking and keep talking? When's the miracle going to happen? Like I said at the beginning, the miracle has happened. If you're like me, if you're the alcoholic of my type, the drug addict of my type, and you're sitting here on a Wednesday night in Visalia, California, and you're not drunk, you're not loaded, you know, there's a guy that I don't like. I'll mention him. I can't give you his name. But he said something really profound that I'd never heard in any meeting I ever went to. I was like, damn, he's got a good one. I hate repeating, you know, stuff like that for somebody I don't like. You know, and he said, if you're sitting at a meeting thinking about getting loaded, that's good. It's better than sitting at the bar thinking about getting sober. And I was like, well, that was a good one. That was an A+. God, every time he says that, I just cringe. Because I don't like him. You know? I'll be dang. You know? But I love the guy. And there's nobody that I've known or have had relationships with or different groups. Like I said, I don't like everybody. But the love that I have for the alcoholic, if anyone calls me anytime, I will do anything to help that person stay sober day to time. Anything. I'll go anywhere, whatever we got to do. You know, we were on our way over. There was a guy that called a mutual friend. And kid couldn't get it. He couldn't get it. You know, he kept going out. And I would give him suggestions. He wouldn't take them. And he went to rehab. And overdosed. And I just kept trying. For some reason, God just kept telling me to just keep, you know, keep on it. You know, and Hassan and I went to his last overdose. His last overdose led him in the community hospital. And after that, you know, he got out and he tried to go to rehab. And he'd been in the hospital, so he was clean for like 3 weeks, a month, or whatever it was. So when he got to rehab, they tested him and he was clean, so they wouldn't let him into detox. So he got another. So he was like, yeah, I'm out of here. You know, so he overdosed again. And he almost died. And he actually, his parents contacted me and I helped get him into another program. And now he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that's actually working the steps. And, you know, he had called me from a seedy motel, a real rough motel on the south side of Fresno, a very dangerous place, crack dealers and, you know, the whole thing, you know.
Rough.
Kind of place I like. You know, he said they had taken his car and he couldn't leave and he needed help. And my first thought, actually when I told him, I said, well, you should have listened to me. And I hung up. Not my fault. I'm not stranded at a crack motel with a bunch of drug dealers, you know. And a minute or two went by, and God told me to help him. I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to help him. I don't want to go over there. But a part of me kind of wanted to go over there. You know what I mean? You know? So I went over there. My sponsor told me to take the cape off. Take the ass off my chest and take the cape off. Stop driving the ambulance. So I got in my ambulance and I drove over there. And it was all bad. But if, I know we've mentioned it's Alcoholics Anonymous, we've mentioned, you know, other outside issues. So these people were outside issued out. They were outside issued out. Me, I'm kind of loud and boisterous anyway. Even when I'm under the influence, I don't really care about law enforcement or people in general, what they care, what they think. So I went in there with that attitude. Hey, what's going on? Where's the keys to his car? Let's get out of here, you know. And they were like, oh, wait, wait. You know, so God was with me that day and I got him home. You know, I got him into rehab. And, you know, things happen like that along my way. You know, and he calls me now like every day. He's not even my sponsee. Hey, I want to run this by you. Oh, my God. Yeah. I just look at the phone. You know you have people that you look at the phone? See their name? Worse than an ex-girlfriend. You know what I mean? A sponsee who's not working the program. You know? So that's my life today. You know, as a result of working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, of doing a thorough four-step on multiple occasions, because I also believe that when we first get here, we can only be so open and so honest because we're so damaged. You know, it's hard to be open, hard to be honest about the hard stuff. You know what I mean? Especially if you're full of pride and ego, which on the street is kind of dichotomy of sorts. But you know, when you work the steps, you find freedom. You know, they talk about that fifth step. After I read the fifth step to my sponsor, I felt so good. I couldn't relate to that. I was just like, oh, I'm glad that's over with. You know, I didn't feel like a burden had been lifted. You know, I didn't get that immediate relief. But the first time I did the steps, I skipped over 6 and 7. I'm here tonight to tell you that 6 and 7 are probably the 2 most important steps, except for you have to do the first 5 to get there. Because what happens is, if we kind of, because when I came in, I'll end with this. When I first came into the program, I heard all this stuff about the 4-step. I was like, oh my God, that's horrible, the 4-step. And everybody was full of fear and anxiety and talked about, oh, I'm on my 4-step. Whew. And, oh my God. And you would look and you're like, oh my God, he's on his 4-step. She's been on her 4-step for 2 years. Wow. And you know, there's a lot of fear and like, oh my gosh. It's a 4-step with this moral inventory. Searching and fearless. Wow. You know? What do you got to do? You know, all you have to do is open the book and turn to how it works. Find somebody you trust. Read the chapter together. Put these neat little columns down. You write some names in them. How they affected you. What they affected. And then there's a far column, and then you can find out why you were affected because of your own actions. It's really cool. You'll find that you have a part in everything. Goes back to something they call the spiritual axiom. Whenever we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's always something wrong with us. That's some bull. God, are you kidding me? With all these stupid people in the world? How can there be something wrong with me when you're stupid? Gosh. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. And you know what? It's not my job to understand it. It's my job to follow it. You know, I talked about we agnostics. That's my favorite chapter in the big book. Like I said, I'm a believer, and it doesn't matter who I believe and what I call them today. It's not your business. It's not my job to make you believe in God, but it is my job to make you believe that I believe in God. Ah, yeah, put that where that one's at. Think about that for a quick second. You know what I mean? You know, I'm not as self-righteous as I used to be. I'm not as judgmental or observant. That's a hard one. That's a tough one. You know, I was at the Colorado State Convention about 5 years ago. And, you know, there's people that we judge that come to Alcoholics Anonymous that are newcomers. They come in rough, and they come in mentally ill. And they smell. And, you know, you don't want to get close to them. You know, you don't want them to sit by you. You know, I don't know if anybody's had that same emotion or thoughts about people. You know, and that's our nature. That's our nature, you know, and that's human nature. And I was at this convention, there was this black gentleman in a suit that was too small for him. He had high water things on. He was smoking. He was walking back and forth and kind of talking to himself. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. I hope this guy doesn't come talk to me. You know, and I started observing him. And I observed him, and thank God he's talking to himself and not talking to me. It's a big convention, the Colorado State Convention. Spiritual experiences, you know. I showed up there. I was hired to paint a motel, this big hotel in Grand Junction, Colorado. And it turned out the Colorado State Convention was there, and I didn't know. So the God does that. He's done it twice to me. Can you believe that? It's amazing. I show up at the hotel to paint it, and oh, the convention's next week. Oh, that's awesome. You know, how does that happen? You know, and so I'm at this Colorado State Convention, and this guy, I notice this guy for some reason, you know, it's one of those guys, those mentally ill, smelly guys. Suit's too small. So I go sit down, and there's a lot of people. This is a big convention. Colorado State Convention. And they introduced the keynote speaker from Sandusky, Ohio, one of the original groups, founding groups, out of Akron. And I'll be damned if this guy doesn't get up and walk up as the keynote speaker. Contempt prior to investigation, once again. I found out that day my observations were skewed, like my mind. That guy was one of the most powerful speakers that I've ever heard. He changed my life that day. But he did give me something I'm going to give you tonight. When we walk in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we can quickly surmise, being observant or judgmental or however you want to look at it, who's working a program and who's not. You know, it's evident to see the people that are working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous by their lives, by the fruits that they bear in their lives, by the people they touch. It's real evident. You can see it clearly. Just as clearly, you can see the people who aren't working a program. So you have to make a decision, you know, today. You know, where do you want to be? What side of the street do you want to be on? My sponsors told me for years, there's no gray areas in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're either in or you're out. You know? So you can only stay level for so long. You're either going to be getting closer to the next drink or farther away from the last drink. So it's your choice. You know, if you've related to anything that I've said tonight, if you like me, no, or if you don't like me, that's not my business. I was asked to bring a message of experience, strength, hope. I've been asked to touch on recovery, unity. That's what we're doing right now. We're unified and in service. And I've tried to do that to the best of my ability, to practice these principles in all my affairs with the people I like and especially the ones I don't like. Thank you.